You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
We are gathered here as advisors, as scientists.
The kind of place we expect a ghost to like to wander around.
Hey, we all know how we're going down, baby.
I'll help you. I'm something of a witch.
Welcome to Mission Spooky. I'm your fantastic host, JC. With me today, as per usual, the queen of everything herself, Kiki, our local cryptid enthusiast, Cord, the mushroom maiden, Kayla, and Kiki, do your job. I'm done. I'm out, right? That's all you guys need it?
Yeah, bye. Okay. We are happy to welcome Michelle Bollinger back to the podcast, and this time we are talking about her new book called The Lonely House, which is sort of a departure from what I'm used to reading, because right before we're recording, I mentioned that it wasn't until recently that I realized that she writes a lot of fiction, and I've always used, as I've said before, my personal go-to for quick occult references is The Ghost Hunter's Guide to the Occult, written by her. So, hey, welcome back, and I can't wait to talk about this book, because it is awesome.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
So, tell us a little bit about The Lonely House. Like, give us an idea, because I want to get into this.
So I started the first version of this manuscript, probably close to 10 years ago. And it was one of those novels that didn't quite gel. I had the house and the house as like its own sort of character. And I had some significant plot points, but like I tried it as urban fantasy and I tried it as mystery and just it didn't quite want to come together. And then flash forward a few years, I do a fair amount of gaming writing. And through working on Ghost Hunters for Onyx Path, which is part of the World of Darkness stuff that came out, I think, on Today several years ago. Anyway, I was introduced to a new gaming concept called a journaling game, which for me was really new. Like I'm an old school gamer. Like I was playing D&D back when it was like AD&D, and like we didn't have editions and stuff. So like gaming was you and a bunch of friends. The idea of solo gaming, or just like being able to role play something by yourself. The closest we had were choose your own adventure novels, which were interesting, but like very limited. And I started to like cogitate on what did I like most about this story? And it really was, I wanted to be able to run people through this house to see what they made of it, like where they went. And then the next step was, how do I tell a story like that? Where I don't have to sit down at the table and be the GM for every single person. Like, how do I write that? And Lonely House is what came from that.
You were kind enough to provide a copy. Full disclosure. I did tell you. I got, I want to feel like maybe a little bit more than a quarter of the way through. Get the feel for it. And then I decided to stop because I was like, yeah, I need to do this the full thing. Like, I need to get my journal. I need to, like, actually participate in this because the concept is really cool. The story had me, so that's not a problem. Like, I want to finish this book. But as a gamer, too, I'm like, wait, this is a game. I'm not fully participating, you know? So first of all, that's the first thing I want to say was, like, how cool that this concept is. And, like, I have played one solo game that was a Kickstarter, actually, and that was fun. But yeah, during COVID, I think that's when things really ramped up in general for getting back into gaming for me personally, especially D&D. And then I started doing the duet style with my husband because he was home too, you know. But now I'm kind of like, oh, he's back to work, and now I can do something on my own. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I know COVID changed the face of gaming for a lot of people because we had platforms for remote play, and some people were definitely using things like Roll20 and whatnot, but there wasn't such, like we had kind of a deus ex machina, like we didn't really, during lockdown, like you couldn't go out and hang out with your friends and game around a table. But we needed a distraction. And like all of these neat concepts of journaling games and memento games and keepsake stuff, duet gaming, like really took off. And it's been fascinating to see it really continue now that we don't have quite the same pressing need. I know for me, it opened up this almost an intimate style of writing where, like, there's one way you write a novel and you create characters and those characters can't change based on who's reading them. With making a book that is also a game, you have to create the breathing room for a self-insert character where people can choose, what does the world look like? What do you look like? You know, are you a guy? Are you a girl? Like, are you big? Are you tall? Do you wear glasses? So writing it with the intention to, like, strip away descriptions of the narrator too was also, like, a fun challenge to, like, give it as much breathing room as possible for each person to be in that story and get sucked in.
I like the way you just said that's like an intimate thing with the reader, right? Because I felt like you're writing to me. Like, oh, this is exciting because I'm the main character.
Yeah, the choice to make it like present tense and second person. So it's, you know, you're being addressed through the entire thing. Like, you are doing this, you hear this. And it's not a style of writing that you see generally, like, outside of, like, really experimental, like, high-lit novels and stuff, you don't see second person. And you see more present tense these days, but we didn't certainly see it 20 years ago. And I don't know, like, I also wanted to write it in a way that, like, you could sit down and just read it from start to finish. But the points during the plot where things ratchet up and you get to make a decision, do you just run away because this place starts to get really weird? I wanted to leave that option open for people. It was just fun to, like, ratchet things up in this moody, gothic, haunted house story.
And without giving away too much, like, for spoilers, the general concept is you have the option, if you want to be able to inherit this house. And I love the very beginning where you're like, you set it up for everybody and you're like, this is how this is going to go. And you're going to be given choices occasionally. And you're supposed to be journaling at certain points and you'll prompt us to do that. And the first thing that got me was very reminiscent of one of the very first Choose Your Own Adventure books that I ever read. And I can't tell you what the name of it was, honestly. But it was very funny to me when the very first thing, oh, what are you going to do? And I made a choice and I turned to the page and it's like, well, your journey's over. You know, have a nice day.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, okay, that's perfect. Yep.
Yeah, so see, that was my thing with the Choose Your Own Adventure stuff, where it's like, okay, well, okay, you're done. And the mimic eats you.
Right?
Oops.
One of the things, though, that I like about that, now I'm thinking as a player of, you know, D&D and also a DM, too. So I'm just like, that's kind of interesting, because what if I'm reading this book and I'm doing the journaling? And now I'm thinking, like, oh, I'm definitely going to keep reading. I'm not going to stop. Well, I'm going to definitely do with the next part that I'm supposed to, because I want to know. What if I didn't? That'd be an interesting character concept.
You just put it down and never look at the book again?
Well, what I'm saying is that as a character, though, in the book, you're given, you might be given that choice. And I'm like, well, I could create a character. That'd be kind of funny as hell. Like, well, what's your backstory? Well, I almost did all these wonderful things, but I didn't, you know?
Well, and also it doesn't hit that point of, like, game over, like, no explanation at all. Like, at each of those points where your character can choose to, like, okay, well, weird stuff has happened, but I'm going to keep going. The other option is, you know what? No, I'm going to leave. But then you're invited to say, like, so what's your story after that?
Right.
How did that impact your world? Like, the setup is, I think, really relatable for a lot of people. Like, you're in an apartment, you know, presumably in a city, and your landlord is selling the building out from under you and everybody else. And you've been given, like, you know, a couple of weeks to get the F out. Mm-hmm. And you don't really have a whole lot of prospects. And so this windfall happens. So knowing that that's, like, the container in which your character's operating is, you're going to be homeless. And what happens when you walk away from what seems like a fantastic opportunity? Big house, lots of money, P.S., haunted as fuck.
Now, can I look at local priest rates, see if it's cheaper to exorcise the demons, or, like, I could shop around. I could... You know, with the housing market the way it is right now. I'll take a ghost.
That's the fun thing is you absolutely could. Like, that's the story you could write. Like, I wanted to create a space in which it's not just a static thing. Like, one of my frustrations with Choose Your Own Adventure stuff is, you know, by the nature of creating branching narrative in a book, is you only have so many different things you can do. It's also why I find computer games a little bit more immersive, because you can be a little more dynamic with that branching narrative, but it still means that you get a little railroaded here and there. I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3, and there's a couple of points where it just funnels you forward, and it's irritating, because, like, I want to be, but what happens if I go over here, though? Like, I want that story, too.
All right, I want to say it. I wasn't the first one to bring it up. I've been sitting here, I've been biting my tongue, I've been ready to just throw some quips out there asking about which romance paths I can go down. I wasn't the first one to do it. I'm an adult.
It's a fun immersive thing, and they put a lot of work, like as someone who really appreciates the kind of like long-term strategy and like landscape building that has to go into like that type of branching narrative. Baldur's Gate 3 is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I'm just over here with my 10-year-old computer that cannot play the game.
Oh, that computer would just be like, I'm coming to join you, honey!
And I'm dying because I've played all the Baldur's Gate stuff ever since the first one came out. And I'm just like, dang it. And
well, you haven't played the third one.
Shut up, Disney. I'm coming to your house.
Get you a PS5.
I could play it on the... I can play it on my computer. Highest settings.
Yeah.
I don't need high settings.
That podcaster money.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's where JC has been this entire time.
Truth. Yeah, he's actually just been playing Baldur's Gate 3 this whole time.
I'm barely past Act 1.
Wow.
I keep making new characters. I know that you can just change classes and stuff. I keep making new characters.
No, I did the same thing with Early Access. Like, I did that first little bit of Act 1 so often with, like, what's it like if I'm a paladin? What's it like if I... Oh, who am I kidding? I always play a half-elven ranger. Like, that is the character I have played since I was in fourth grade.
Nice. I had such a fun time playing it. I thought, what if I didn't? So I decided to go as my first Dark Urge run and immediately had to go to therapy and decide if I'm a bad person.
Seriously, the freaking Dark Urge. Like, so a couple of us did like a little group run, and my one friend is a Chaos Gremlin, and he went full Dark Urge, and this is probably a spoiler at this point, but like there's, you know, where Gail is like, hey, help, I'm stuck, grab my hand, pull me out of this thing. And the Dark Urge character does a thing that I was like, oh, they're not effing around with dark. Like, that's, oh my god, you can pick that up and carry it around. What the hell?
I tried playing a Dark Urge, but I'm too good of a person. And then I was like, but I don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah, you black out and you're just like, everybody's dead.
I know I'm a little late, but I'd like to welcome all the listeners to our, mini Baldur's Gate cast, hidden snugly in the middle of our regular podcast.
You thought you were coming in to listen to that book review.
Nope, we're talking about Gale today.
Again.
good stories, like, and the architecture of a good story that like really sucks you in, that really gives you the opportunity to tailor it to how you want that story to be, and that's challenging to do in print with a book format, but it's what I was trying to do with Lonely House.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you consider this almost like a Choose Your Own Adventure book, or is this something that is like you would consider it too far away from that aspect?
I struggled with like what to call it, because it's really its own animal, and I've run it past both like writers and gamers and various people. It's closest to a Choose Your Own Adventure. I've called it a solo journaling game. There's a game out there called A Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, with a Kickstarter that just did a secondary one, 500-year-old vampire. And I think it is closest to that, where it is an immersive story and your way of role-playing this solo is to engage with a journal and write out your thoughts in reaction to prompts and choices, but the story changes based on those choices. And by the time you're done, you can play through it multiple times and you won't have the same story twice. So solo journaling game, technically, but for those of us who grew up on Choose Your Own Adventure, it's going to have a little bit of that flavor. The only difference is, instead of like, here is your choice, now turn to page X, and you just have that choice laid out for you. This is actually the word, what I've called it, is collaborative fiction. Because honestly, that's my favorite thing about GMing, is that really roleplay for me is collaborative storytelling with your friends, where you are each sort of like holding space for the other to add to this story. Mm-hmm. And what those choices that prompt the journal entries in Lonely House do is sets a thing up, gives you everything that you need to know for like what might happen next, and then lets you decide what that is. And you're part of the story and basically like your reactions, and then move on to the next bit as the house reacts to that.
All right.
It was interesting on my part because when I got the PDF and I started reading through it, because I've been kind of just going section by section, kind of from journal entry to journal entry throughout the week that I've had it. I went into it not really knowing anything about it other than, hey, read this book. We're going to talk about it on Friday. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go into this. I don't even know what the genre is. I assume it's something spooky, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm reading the beginning of it and kind of doing these journal entries, it was interesting to me because it almost feels like a self-help book at the very beginning, because you have to kind of determine, who am I? Do I want to play somebody else or do I want to do as myself? So I kind of went as myself. And as I get to the journal entry where you have the option to like run away or go into the house, I kind of went both ways where I'm like, all right, if this was me as I am right now, I'd run away. Why would I do that? Mm-hmm. And kind of like explore, where do my shortcomings come into the whole thing, and kind of self-reflect before it even gets spooky. And then I go back into it and I just got a little farther where things are starting to be like, it's fun in that way, because I do a lot of journaling, you know, for mental health reasons and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I approached it to start. Mm-hmm. And I think it could be a really interesting take in that aspect as well, like a reflecting journey, but also a fun journey.
Yeah, the psychological aspect is absolutely working as intended. Psychological horror is a big part of this, because it's you, like you alone in this space with whatever's going on around you. So, you know, obviously a lot of the horror is more you. How do you react? Who are you? How does this place change you? Do you even notice those changes? As the story goes on, one of the things that I try to do is erode the sense of reality between vision, dream, and waking world, which hopefully also translates to the player themselves, as that sort of like fourth wall gets a little wibbly as you're like, you are in this space. Who are you as you are experiencing this? I like being sneaky.
Very, very sneaky.
So I just want to say from a personal standpoint how real that actual scenario is as far as inheriting someplace that is weird and messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I have talked briefly on this podcast about how my grandmother's home was, I don't know what. I think it was haunted to begin with, and then I think that they made things worse. She was in a psychic group. It was early on in the 80s, and I know we briefly talked about that too last time.
Some of those got pretty wild.
Yeah. So I remember I was telling my husband, you know, as we're dating and then we're engaged and we get married, and I've always talked to him about this house. I never will step foot in that house again. You know, my grandmother and I, unfortunately, were estranged. So in any case, I was like, you know, it'll never happen. I'll never inherit it anyway. But if I did, I would never, ever live there. No way.
And that's where you live right now, right?
Yeah.
She passed away. And with the housing prices in Pennsylvania, I looked at him and said, I'm telling you right now, if for some reason she did leave that house to me, we're living in it. Okay. Like, I will deal with it. I know what it is. I've had experience with it. If it's still around, I'll deal with it. I'm older now. I'm not 12 anymore, you know? It's a house. My grandfather built it. It's in a pretty decent location. He's looking at me like I am absolutely insane. He's like, but this is the house that you said this happened in, and this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah. And we're going to go live in it if she gave it to me, because it's a free house, dude.
Right?
And I'm out here. I'm out here on the other side. Just, nope, not going in there. Not doing it. You haven't been in my reoccurring nightmares. Not going in there.
Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
Oh, man. I think me, you, and Cord are the only ones who may get that. I don't know. Cord's laughing. Yep. I'm all in. Yeah, I do like what you said too, Kayla, about how it did feel like a really cool ass self-help book, because you're right. You start thinking about those things and within yourself, if you're choosing to say, I am the one doing the journaling, because you could totally say, I'm a character, you know, you could just make somebody up. But yeah, you start asking those questions like, would I go? In my case, yeah, I'm going to go in the house. We're good. We're fine. Does it have Wi-Fi? That's the only thing I really care about. The rest of it I'll deal with later.
Imagine like one of the plot points being like to convince the cable guy to stay to set up the internet. All kinds of crazy, like,
shush, this is the sequel. Shush. Don't spoil the sequel, JC. Jesus.
Oh, and actually, I was going to say side quests, but yeah, there are. You have little side quests in the book too.
Yeah, there are a couple of like little, like, hey, do you like food? What did you cook?
Yeah, I love that. Like, well, can I order out? I'm like, did I get sushi? Maybe I did.
That's how I feel like I'm being analyzed. The little side quests where I'm like, what did I order for food? There's something more to this. Did I order the right food? Did I order the wrong food? Does the ghost not like the smell of Italian?
Depends on the ghost.
These are all things that can be answered in your own mind too, in the journal.
Well, that's the thing I love about the journaling games is they are just inevitably you lay yourself bare, even if you're acting through a character. Like there's decisions that you and only you are going to make, and triggers that you and only you are going to have. All the journaling games that I've played, like, I learned so much about myself. Like, it's hard not to have it also be kind of a psychological exercise.
I do have one question, and feel free to answer it or not answer it, but I was curious as I was reading, what song did you hear when you were writing the book on the phonograph?
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, yeah.
It's that classic. Like just old timey, like old timey music.
I went straight up Andrews Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree.
I could also like sometimes in my head it was like bop 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 bop, because dreaming plays such a weird role in this.
Dang, those are all good choices.
Nobody went with Put Another Nickel in the Nickelodeon?
You know, there's a really good place in Pennsylvania to go see a good old Nickelodeon machine.
Oh, cool.
It's, what is it called? The American Adventure Tour?
So one of the other things that I wanted to do with this was to leave the possibility open of, like, this is straight up horror, this is cosmic horror, this is time travel, this is sci-fi, like, you're actually in, like, a weird spaceship or something. Like, what direction do you want to take this? So with that song playing on the phonograph, I wanted to leave the possibility of, like, it's a modern song, but it's on, like, an old wax record. How the fuck? Like, how does that even happen?
It's just someone going, wake up! Wake up!
Yeah.
Well, that's what I like. And I'm actually excited because that's kind of where I left off, was the journal entry with the what did you hear on the phonograph. And I'm like, I want to keep reading, but I want to keep reading and like play the song every time the song, you know, what might come up if it comes up again.
Yes. That was something I was hoping people would do.
And then think about it like, if I did a second run through, like, what if I picked a different song? Would that change how I interpret the rest of the book going through? Like, I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, no, music, I think, plays a big role, at least for me, for setting the stage.
Are you going to do another one of these? Please say yes.
Yes, and the question is just, like, what is going to grab me? Now, I've done a bunch of other little journaling games, too, one of which is Midnight's Kiss. It's a little bit more like straight up journaling game, and that one is 18 and over vampire lover stuff. Like, just lets you lean right on into all of the vampire romance tropes. It's kind of a dating sim and lets you build your perfect vampire lover and then go through a romance with them.
How do they smooch around the long teeth?
I mean, that's up to you to decide.
Right. You need to buy it like I did. Cord.
My itch.io page, I've got community copies of just about everything up there. Because, like, I mean, everybody knows me. I write nonfiction for, like, spooky stuff. You know, Dictionary of Demons, Ghost Hunter Survival Guide, things like that. And I do all the work on the paranormal shows. The gaming is where I go to have fun. So I make sure that those have, like, regular sales, regular giveaways, like, regular stuff. I'm like, just please enjoy this little world that I created. And some of them are high concept. Some of them are just like, I needed to get this story out of my head. And a game is the format that it came in. Some of them are therapeutic for me. So, like, there's a game up there called Rainbow Bridge. And it is a game where you and a couple of friends, or just you solo, play as pets who have passed beyond the Rainbow Bridge and then find what the next stage of your life is. And it's a way of memorializing and sort of like thinking back about the good times, because memory and like the loves that you left behind and the love that you're looking forward to in the future are all part of that.
Oh,
I really like that concept. It's almost like if I were to be counseling somebody who's dealing with grief from a pet, I would recommend that book.
Yeah, I can't get away from part of my degree is in psychology. And I think that shows in all of the stuff that I write. But the games especially, because with gaming, there's so much about ourselves that comes out in roleplay, whether we mean it to or not. It's sort of like this excavation of self, and like we get to inhabit different shards of possibility and act out vicariously things that we might never do in real life, but they nevertheless help us understand, how would I think about this here and now? Like what does that make me feel here as a person, with the understanding that this is a character and you're playing. And also, I can't help but kind of get toothy about it and like really chew into the big existential questions that like role-playing characters often raise.
Yeah, I really like that idea, that concept. Because I think I used a lot of D&D when I was younger to create characters that were kind of like, how do I describe this in a way that's not sad? I didn't have very good role models growing up. So I played through characters who I thought, if I could learn to be like the best version of me, what would a paladin be like? I'm going to try to be a paladin. And I kind of taught myself moral ethics through D&D.
I think that's a perfectly normal, like, I see that happen with people all the time. Again, I've been gaming since I was 10 with roleplay and stuff. And, you know, of course you, like, try out different personalities, or you try out different, like, what is your idea of an evil character? What does an evil person do from your perspective?
Doesn't like cats.
Yeah, like, you're going to try to be evil, what are you going to do? And, like, how does that make you feel? Like, can you actually go all in with an evil character, or are you inevitably going to do a redemption arc because you just can't stand being that awful? Or, like, who are you really? And roleplay for me helps to answer that question. And like, if the world were a very different place, if you had different opportunities, what other parts of yourself would you explore? What would you give yourself permission to explore?
So I'm guessing you've heard that like people use there's therapy D&D groups.
Oh yeah. No. So some of my old college gaming buddies, one of them, Chris Robichaud, is the person who helped design the zombie apocalypse ethics LARP at Harvard or MIT.
Okay.
So like we went on to basically introduce LARPing and role-playing in settings where it's an ethics problem, it's a philosophical problem, it's a way of training people to deal with real-world things without the, you know, actual real-world repercussions. Role-play has fantastic levels of application, both in therapy as well as in training scenarios. My wife just got back from WOOFR, which is Wilderness First Responder Training. And a core part of her wilderness first responder training was they go out into the woods and they basically LARP being a stranded party with people who have like here is the problem that you have. You've broken your arm, but you're also diabetic, and you have your sugar packet, and you have to, like, play it all out and handle the emergency. And how you answer those problems, how you treat that person, but the role play is what teaches you the end game of the stuff. So, yeah, like, I am a big proponent that role play is just something that everybody should try at least once. It teaches you a lot about yourself and the world.
I think people that say that they don't like role play still, in their own way, role play stuff. Role play is just such a great way to problem solve and figure things out and evolve as a person.
Everyone has their own headcanon.
Stories. Like we're just telling stories. We tell stories to ourselves. To some okay, so as a really nerdy, introverted, and if you can believe it or not, very shy person, Vampire the Masquerade LARP is what taught me how to talk to people. Mm-hmm. Like, learning, like just being dumped into this massive sort of social interaction. And at first it was, oh, this is the character that I need to play. But then, like, learning, oh, these are some really useful adaptive ways of interacting with people. I'm going to put that into my toolkit. And look at me now.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's one thing to play D&D around a table. It is something completely different to get into LARPing.
Yes.
You really get immersive with your character. And I remember being like, these people are nuts. Why are they doing this? This is crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And they're talking about the game, but I don't get it at the time because I'm just like, what? Yeah, I started channeling my character and I was doing this and doing that. And I was like, you guys are, I don't know what is going on. So then finally somebody's like, yeah, you need to come play Vampire Werewolf with us. And I'm like, okay, sure. And then I was like, wait, is this like one of those criminal, like, type things? Like, did you know, where I had done two of those, and both of them were dress up ones. And one of them was at a place here, like basically a museum. And I had to be a fortune teller for that one. And the other one, I was just an aristocrat, right? And a friend of mine who was also into Society for Creative Anachronism, right? So he's in that. And he's all like, you should come to these things with me. So I'm like, oh, well, in that case, I've already have played that, in essence. I have rented costumes from Bethlehem. Good old Scaramouche. Shout out to Scaramouche. No longer there, but that was great. Really fancy costumes too, because they would make things over at the Shakespearean festival, and then Canadians
get into the costumes.
Like, yes. Oh yeah.
That's the thing, is roleplay will, it is a gateway drug to crafting, to sewing, yes, costume making, to prop making. Like, it is.
Listen, Michelle, I have no idea what you're talking about. I did not just make tiefling horns for the character that I'm playing that no one can see it, okay? Because it's a podcast.
But that's the beauty of it. Like even just sitting around a table, like my old gaming crew, like, we, even when we weren't LARPing, we were always still inhabiting those characters. And, like, you know, you'd have, like, those back when we were young and could do, like, a 12-hour, like, nonstop, like, you know, you stopped to go get some more Doritos and Mountain Dew, and that was about it. But, like, you would get so into these interpersonal character reactions that, like, you'd be bawling. I think the one that, like, really hit me, I'm usually the forever DM, but my buddy was DMing this one, and he had us in this little world called Phazarn, and it was like this ice planet. And we are role-playing, and it was one of those sessions that ran like 6 or 8 hours. It is high summer in muggy Northeast Ohio. And we walked out of this expecting, like we were freezing, like physically felt like it was cold, and then like walk out and just have like the shock of like, oh yeah, that's right, the real world is 90 degrees.
Some of the best role playing I have ever seen in my life was done by Cord, and he did an entire, like, it's, I could almost call it an interpretive dance.
Mm.
Because he was being a tax collector, shuffling papers to look for tax evasion, to What song was it from Star Wars, Cord?
It was Duel of Fates.
I had... did the entire song, Duel of Fates, looking for, because this was a 5-year campaign, he had finally found his father in the game had been falsifying tax records, and someone told him, and he was finally going to uncover this horrible misdeed, and he acted out the whole thing.
Like, when the song picks up with the ho ho, like, found the folder in the filing cabinet, held it up, fantastic. Here it is.
That's awesome. No, probably my favorite, Joseph Fargo of Monolith Graphics, Nox Arcana, lives near me. We've collaborated it since 95, and he is also, he is actually the very best game master and game designer I have ever met and ever had the pleasure of working with. Every year for Halloween, he turns his entire house into a puzzle. They also do like the Dr. Arcana games. So you, with the Dr. Arcana games, you can get an idea of like how he loves to make wicked puzzles. But there's nothing quite like going in there as he's playing all of these characters and like doing quick costume changes and having his partner Christine like sort of like, you know, keep you occupied while he goes back and then comes back with like this full-on like Baphomet outfit to like play the thing that you've summoned up. The one year, because again, role-playing can lead to carpentry at his old house. And I still don't know how he did this. He had this roll top desk and we had to like solve something and then like pull something on the wall. And it made the drawer of the desk open up. And I still don't know how he did it. Like in his new house, he literally has a moving bookshelf. Like in the recording studio, there is a bookshelf. If you know what to pull on that bookshelf, the whole bookshelf just picks up, moves over, and then you're in a storage room. The immersion and the ability for like really good GMs. I mean, there's the Matt Mercer effect. Like not everybody's a voice actor, but everybody has a kind of magic. If they're a good DM, they have a way of either using words to describe a scene to pull you in, or they know what music to use, or the body language. Like, you create this intensely surreal experience. And for the moment, like, it is real pure magic, because you are creating a new reality out of thought and dream. And you let other people be part of that. Even for just a night or a day. It's great.
What class did you play in Baldur's Gate 3?
So I am currently just my half-elven ranger. I've tried lots of other things. I tried paladin. Fell really fast as a paladin. Oops. But my go-to is always ranger. I like the mix of things. Gloomstalker. So, you know, sort of best of both worlds in terms of like, I like ambushes. I like sneak attacks. That's just me.
Which partner did you pick?
Who'd you bang?
Listen, these are the two questions that help me understand the soul of a person.
My rule was anybody who came on to me too strong, I'd be like, nope. So like hot Gith Yankee girlfriend was like, what? The second night she wants to jump my bone. So I'm like, just no, I don't know. I started romancing Astarion because I was just sort of curious how that would play. And honestly, the voice actor for Astarion is so good that it's really hard not to want to listen to him talk more.
Yep. And I don't even play the game, but I just follow him on TikTok so I can listen to him talk all the time.
Karlak, the same. Like, I love what they did with that character. Yeah. I love what she says. Like, she is so fun. I think I ended up accidentally romancing Will. We ended up dancing. Like he said something about it. And I'm like, oh, I would dance with you once. And we had like a little cutscene about dancing. And I was like, I think I'm dating Will. I'm not sure about that. So I sort of got Will and Gale on the hook both at the same time. Shadowheart's a little too broody for me.
I bang Shadowheart.
She's much more my roommate's type, and it almost feels like I want to just leave Shadowheart for Paul. Paul can, like, she is so his type.
See, we're all so different around here.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about Karlak, honestly. Like, she just seems like she could crush me with her thighs.
Karlak's my girl, for sure.
This is a good choice. I approve.
When I don't do Karlak, I do nobody.
Also, Halson looks at me like I have a tasty half-elven treat, and I found that, like within, like, the first time I meet him, and I'm like, I'm not comfortable. I don't want to know about your twisting vines, Mr. Druid Man.
This is part two of Baldur's Gate podcast.
Which, again, I was not the first one to bring up.
Game of the year. Shoo-in for game of the year, for sure.
I really thought that I would romance Astarion. There's a certain irony in me being the one romanced by a vampire.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to ask, because you said you had done, like, the romance vampire book. So I was like, did we live the dream?
I'm usually the vampire is the thing. Yeah, Shadowheart is just a little too something for me. I'm really curious about some of Gale's stuff, but man, does that dude come with some baggage.
I can't get behind anybody who constantly name drops their ex.
Also, my problem with Gale is the way they wrote the character and the way he's voiced is he reminds me of like half a dozen of my old gaming buddies. Like, he looks like them too. So I'm like, Yeah, so I'm currently floating back between a couple of people.
My first playthrough, I was set on Will. And I went into it blind because I hadn't even honestly heard of the game.
Yeah.
But Cord was like, hey, this game looks really good. You should check it out. So I went, okay, I will, because you said it's D&D. So, all right.
I'm sorry, world, that I unleashed this upon you.
It's your fault.
So I play it and I'm like, all right, I didn't really like any of the others. I actually didn't find Gale because I'm an extremely cautious person. And when I showed up to where he was, I went, oh no, that looks dangerous. I'm just going to keep on keeping on.
A hand coming out of a rock? Nay, nay.
I didn't realize until act two that I completely biffed it. But I went to do the whole Will thing. And then the very last thing I did in act one was rescue Halson, who I thought was like an old ass man, an old ass druid, and then he stops being a bear, and I just went, oh god, Will, I'm so sorry. And like immediately after, the dance scene happens and I have to be like, no.
Jess was watching when I freed House in the last time I was doing my playthrough, and I did the Squidward quote when he popped out of the bear. I went, oh no, he's hot! We had a good chuckle about it.
No, the voice acting for that is just fantastic, and it's immersive, and it's fun, and it also scratches my itch of like tactical kill it all and loot it to the ground. So that's fun too.
And they're still adding epilogues to it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they really put a lot of brilliant work into it. I've played a lot of games, both computer games, in-person games and stuff. Like, trying to find a way to make a computer game feel like a tabletop campaign and to get like all of the layers and depth of character interaction that you do with a group is a huge challenge, and they've done a really good job of capturing that and also being true to the rules, so it feels like you're playing D&D, which is really nice. And also, if you've never played D&D, you can just play it as a computer game and have fun, or a dating sim.
I actually have, mostly at work, I have a bunch of friends who are pretty legitimately scared to play D&D with me because I think they're scared to sit around on the table and pretend to be someone else. But they bought the game and were like, this is awesome. I understand why you play D&D now. Like, but yeah, thanks.
Look, I'm just over here. Speaking of, I was telling JC, I've got to go to a party tomorrow night. It's my sister's birthday. I'm going to run a short session, but I have to deal with people who are very much like, I don't want to play D&D. So it's like, well, I'll run 5e. I'll make it super easy. All you got to do is roll d20. I'm not going to take any other dice. But I've decided to make the characters that they can choose from. They're all porn stars. This is going to be so much damn fun. So I'm going to get a bunch of people drunk, and we're going to have fun.
And that's D&D, kids.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to be like.
My wife does not like to play computer games, partly because I think she's convinced that she will get sucked in forever and never like move again. Which, you know, is valid. But like, she came in because there's a Quasit that was not voiced in early release, but it's voiced now, and you can summon this little thing. It's in act one, and its name is Shovel. And I was laughing so hard. I'm like, hon, you have to. I reloaded the game. I'm like, you need to listen to this dialogue. Like, just come here. This is your inner voice, my love. This is you. And then she's like, why do the stalagmites look like dicks? I'm like, oh, sweetheart. The amount of double entendres, triple entendres, and just straight up sexual references that you're going to find here. She's like, maybe I just want to watch you play this. I'm like, okay. Wait till you see the mushrooms in the Underdark, hon.
They're people.
They're people. And then also, like it was just, this is a very, very thirsty game. It doesn't pretend to not be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's that one drow who is just like every Twilight fangirl ever. If you haven't gotten to her in Act 2, she's hilarious. Anyhow, it's fun. It's immersive. Also, I write games. I would be remiss if I didn't mention with Lonely House, it's the first piece of fiction I've done that I did as an audiobook. I've got a very talented audiobook narrator, Rain Corbin, doing the narrator voice because I wanted something that was like as neutral as possible. And Rain's got really good chops for horror, particularly. So that's up on Audible now, too. You can just put it on in the background and let the narrator take you through this place and then pause and do your thing. Or just listen to the whole thing. Turn the lights low. Don't get too scared.
Too late.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break for our featured music. And that is going to be a band called The Ancient Asses. And they are from out in California. It's a duo. They say that they were birthed in Desert Daze, D-A-Z-E, for those who don't know, in a 2022 campsite. And they've been friends forever. And they met while they were interning in New York City. And then they just kind of released this album in 2023 called Shift the Paradigm. And I chose my favorite song off of that album, which is called Gasoline Suit. So you're going to be listening to that real quick, and then when we come back, we'll talk with Michelle about where to find the book at.
Walking through hell in your gasoline suit, like Pete Rose would do, to keep playing baseball. You think you know what you want, but you ain't got a clue.
Welcome back.
There you go. You remember how this works. Good
yeah,
job.
Yeah, we don't actually play the music. I always have to remind myself that.
Now, what song do you hear in your head when we pause for a music break?
Right?
Boots and Cats and Boots and Cats and Boots and Cats and Boots and Cats.
That's my favorite song. Where can we find this book?
Okay, so Lonely House is currently digital only or on audiobook. So you can find it on my website, michellebellanger.com, or over on my gaming site at itch.io, and that is Dark Heart Games, Zosh Dark Heart. So look for Dark Heart Games on itch.io, and you will find not only Lonely House, but half a dozen other games that I have put together, including Rainbow Bridge, which I had mentioned. Or get thee to Audible and get the Rain Corbin narrated audiobook of Lonely House for an especially immersive experience.
That actually sounds pretty cool to have somebody read it.
Yeah, that's helpful for me.
I got so many chills when we started. I did it on a lark where I was like, hey, okay. So let me explain how I met Rain. There is Tenebris Press put together a body horror anthology called Your Body Is Not Your Body, and Rain wrote a splatterpunk story in this. I was invited to write the introduction. And in reading the anthology, Rain's story like just leapt out at me. And apparently it was like one of the first things that they'd ever gotten published. And they were like super like, oh, I don't know if it was really good. I'm like, this was memorable, gruesome. Like there's literally like a spine excision. Like it's full on like just gritty, grim splatterpunk. I loved it. And then I found that Rain does voice narration. I was like, I'm going to file that away. And when doing stuff with, like, kicking around ideas for how to make games more accessible, because I don't know about everybody else, I'm a voracious reader, and there are just week-long, month-long stretches where I can't stand the idea. Like, I just can't focus. And, like, there's just so much going on in the world. And it just erodes the way your brain wants to work. So sometimes listening to a book, like the Old Gods Pod, I love.
I fucking love them.
Yeah, like that. I was like, well, what if we turn Lonely House into an audiobook, though? So I reached out to Rain, and they got the first couple of like chapters. They loved it, and I got chills. And I was like, all right, well, audiobook it is. Here we go. So my first foray onto Audible is this weird, strange novella, horror, choose-your-own-adventure journaling game hybrid thing. So that's how that happened. Go get it. It's fun.
I will probably get it on Audible then, because I don't read so good.
that's fine. Like, we live in a world where there's no reason not to try a different way to access information. Like, we've got so many options up for us now.
I love classic lit, but I think I have a comprehension issue. I'll read a whole page 5 times and not understand what it says.
Everybody learns differently. Everybody accesses information differently. We have... I could do a whole nother podcast on, like, just because you're not a reader doesn't mean you're... Actually, I will finish it with this. My friend Laurel K. Hamilton has terrible dyslexia and was told she would never be a writer. And she is currently celebrating the 30th anniversary of her Anita Blake series. So to heck with that.
Nice.
Right. And for those of you who don't know Laurel K. Hamilton, go pick up the books. Like, just go start reading the Anita Blake series. Like, now. That was one of our top. That's the old bookseller in me. I'm like, that was one of our top sellers in that genre for ages.
She has knocked down some pretty cool walls. Like, just is just a real genuine human being. And yeah, also very dyslexic. Reading is hard. Spelling is harder. And she had stories to tell. Didn't let it stop her.
Folks, thank you so much for listening today. And just remember, stay spooky and don't die. But if you do, contact us.
So this has been your evening's entertainment with Lonely House Roleplay, geeking out about sexy times in Baldur's Gate and all of the strange things that we weirdos can bring to you. If you want to summon me, the things to put in the summoning circle would be a cup of tea, some 70% cacao dark chocolate, a cat toy, and a role-playing book. See you around.
No choice but to huff the fumes from your gasoline suit. Can't think clear or tell what's true. You ain't got a clue. But you ain't got a clue.